This is People First Radio On Demand, podcasts, streaming, and MP3 downloads, available when you want to listen at chly.ca, iTunes, and at the People First Radio website.
CHLY 101.7 FM, Vancouver Island. On the web, www.chly.ca.
Hiya, Mr. Flintstone.
Greetings, Rocky, my boy. Pack of Winstons, please.
Oh, you like them Winston cigarettes, huh, Mr. Flintstone?
But of course, they really got something.
You bet your life. Folks who really enjoy smoking know it's what's up front that counts. And that's where Winston steps out ahead of the crowd with their exclusive filter blend. Choice Golden Tobaccos, specially selected and specially processed for filter smoke.
Hold it, hold it.
You know what you mean?
What are you pitching Winston's at me for? You know I never smoke nothing else.
Just practicing, Mr. Flintstone. Everybody knows that.
Winston tastes good, like a cigarette should.
Yeah.
See you soon, Rocky.
The Flintstones has been brought to you by Winston, America's best-selling, best-tasting filter cigarette.
Winston tastes good like a cigarette should.
Attitudes towards smoking have changed so much that it may seem impossible to believe that the first two seasons of the cartoon series, The Flintstones, was sponsored by a cigarette company. Each episode ended with a special integrated commercial during which characters Fred and Barney enjoyed smoking Winston cigarettes and extolled their virtues. Fast forward to 2010 and the U.S. Surgeon General's report, which clearly states there is no risk-free level of exposure to tobacco smoke, and inhaling the chemical mixture in tobacco smoke causes adverse health outcomes.
Research has found that people with psychiatric illnesses are about twice as likely to smoke as others. Those with schizophrenia and alcohol dependence are particularly likely to be heavy smokers, with rates as high as 86%. What does all of this mean for people who have been confined to psychiatric institutions where smoking has been banned? Stanley Stylianos is the program manager at Ontario's Psychiatric Patient Advocate Office. He's on the phone with us today. Welcome to People First Radio, Stan.
Thank you.
Stan, the Flintstones weren't the only ones involved in promoting cigarette smoking. There are plenty of ads portraying even doctors as smoking and recommending particular brands. Tell us more about the historical context of all of this.
Well, I think it's not very long ago that we did see printed advertisements as well as TV advertisements for smoking products, for various cigarettes. And indeed, I think the 50s and probably into the 60s, there were doctor endorsements for smoking as perhaps a healthful way to relax. So I think when we're looking at this issue, it's important to put the issue historically into that context. We're not talking about a very long time ago, and even today we can still see smoking in various public venues and by various public figures. So it's not a very long time frame that we're talking about.
What about tobacco promotion on inpatient psychiatric units? And I think I'm exclusively talking about the past now. The notion of token economies and the use of tobacco in treatment environments.
Yeah, I think you've identified a really important factor, and that tobacco culture is deeply embedded in psychiatric culture, if you will, in hospitals. And even now in the tertiary care psychiatric facilities, we can still see some evidence of tobacco usage being reinforced on some level. But again, not very long ago, cigarettes were used as a currency to support certain behaviors in psychiatric facilities. And not that long ago, in the 70s, there were some seminal works on developing token economies and stocking hospital tuck shops with cigarettes as a means of shaping behavior.
Tell us about current smoking bans in psychiatric facilities in Ontario and elsewhere in Canada. Just give us a bird's eye view. What has happened across the country?
Well, I think now most governments have recognized the health-related costs and consequences of smoking. I don't think anyone among us would deny that there are powerful health effects attached to smoking. And in Ontario, Smoke-Free Ontario Act came into force. Actually, it's coming up on its anniversary, but it's been in force for 5 years, and it came into force in 2006. And while many facilities tried to maintain controlled smoking areas on the grounds, now this is changing, but so in all tertiary care psychiatric hospitals and all hospitals in Ontario, smoking is banned. And prior to this piece of legislation, there were designated smoking areas in most facilities. So there wasn't smoking just anywhere, but now with these pieces of legislation striving to eliminate smoke in enclosed areas and in public spaces, trying to attack the problem of secondhand smoke, many governments have introduced smoke-free legislation, and Ontario certainly has had its smoke-free Ontario legislation in place for some time now.
Are there any facilities where smoking is absolutely banned, such as an environment in which people don't have access to a smoking facility or a smoking shelter?
Well, yeah, I would say at least in half of the cases in the facilities that we serve, there's been an effort to ban smoking from the grounds, and this has created a hardship for consumers who continue to smoke. And in some cases, the strategy has backfired. In fact, in one facility, which is in the downtown core of Toronto, trying to drive smokers off of the hospital grounds resulted in a major complaint from residents of the community, surrounding community, and then having to reintroduce a designated or a controlled smoking area on the ground. So I guess there's been a power politic at play now, but a lot of facilities are striving to be completely smoke-free, and we've questioned how realistic or fair this might be at this point in time.
This is People First Radio, only on CHLY 101.7 FM and streaming at chly.ca.
Smoking is often viewed as a habit that needs to simply be stopped, but nicotine, the drug in cigarettes and smokeless tobacco, is one of the most addictive substances known. It is considered to be as addictive as cocaine or heroin. Is it ethical to ban smoking in psychiatric facilities? Does anyone have the right to completely prevent another person from smoking? And what are the politics around the banning of smoking in psychiatric hospitals? We're speaking with Stan Stylianos, the program manager at Ontario's Psychiatric Patient Advocate Office.
Stan, tell us, what are the ethical issues involved in this situation?
Well, I think there are many considerations that we have to take into account. I think first, and we were talking about this earlier, is the history and the culture that surrounds smoking, and the fact that people who have mental illness or mental health problems have really been supporting the tobacco economy for some time. So we have something that has historical roots, it has cultural roots, and there are a number of factors, and I think we were talking earlier about how it wasn't very long ago that clinical staff were encouraging the use of cigarettes and tobacco products as a means of supporting certain behaviors and token economies. So I think it's certainly possible to ban smoking in interior spaces, but I think there has to be a consideration of these other factors and an engagement with consumers in terms of policy development. How will the smoking bans play out? What are some of the alternatives that people have in terms of where they might smoke, and realistically implementing a ban so people don't suffer undue hardship? And I think that's been neglected in a lot of facilities where policies, rather draconian policies, are developed without engaging consumers in discussion or dialogue around what they might look at, look like, and what are some of the factors that need to be considered.
The overarching question, of course, is how do institutions balance the complex factors and demands that have been that have given rise to smoking bans while respecting and preserving clients' or patients' rights and autonomy? Tell us more about the friction between those two, I guess you'd say, sides of the equation.
Yeah, I think the I think if we can think of one overarching sort of driver in this story, I think the autonomy issue is very is it. It's the central issue, and I don't think there's always been a consideration of individual choice in terms of smoking and smoking cessation, and there's been a kind of thou shalt attitude. So. When hospital staff are confronted with smokers, it seems to now be their mission to insist that people quit. So rather than doing health teaching, engaging with consumers who still smoke or choose to smoke and encouraging and providing information around the health consequences of smoking and what some of the alternatives and approaches to cessation are, there has been this coercive approach. So it's not like unlike other situations where staff take a coercive attitude. So I think if you're trying to fit it into a framework, there has to be some consideration for autonomy and choice and a recovery-oriented approach to how do we construct and implement a smoking ban? How do we help people to make choices about their own health care, including whether they smoke or not? And I think doing the right thing from our perspective is supporting individual choice and autonomy and leading people to what more helpful choices might be, but not insisting that that people stop smoking when they haven't made that choice themselves.
We have only a moment left in our discussion today, Stan. I'm wondering if there's anything else you'd like to add.
Just that. I think the problem of smoking bans needs to be contextualized with respect to recovery and consumer choice and autonomy. And it's really not, I think the answer to the complexity is that it's not very different from any other issues that require hospital staff and administration to fully engage the people they serve and create a person or client-centered framework for care and treatment.
Thank you very much for taking the time to join us today. We really appreciated that.
Thanks so much for inviting me.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye now.
Stanley Stylianos is the program manager at Ontario's Psychiatric Patient Advocate Office. The Advocate Office is the largest provincial mental health advocacy program in Canada, and its purpose to protect the legal and civil rights of inpatients in Ontario's provincial psychiatric hospitals.
Stanley Stylianos recently presented about the politics and ethics of smoking bans in psychiatric facilities at the 5th annual JEMH Conference on Ethics in Mental Health in Kelowna, British Columbia. JEMH is the Journal of Ethics in Mental Health. I attended the conference on behalf of People First Radio. Listen for more interviews related to ethics and mental health in the coming weeks.
This is a People First Radio podcast. People First Radio is an initiative of Columbian Centre Society in partnership with Radio Malaspina Society and produced at CHLY Community Radio in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed in this interview do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the partnering organizations. Visit us online. Just Google People First Radio to find our webpage.